News, I'm David Byrd. A federal judge on Thursday sentenced Republican operative Roger Stone to at least 3 years, 4 months in prison for obstructing a congressional inquiry into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. As AP's Sagar Meghani reports, Stone, a longtime friend of President Trump, got less than originally asked for by the Justice Department, thanks in part to the intervention of Attorney General William Barr.
Stone is now facing 40 months in federal prison after being convicted last year of witness tampering, lying to Congress, and other charges. Justice Department prosecutors originally recommended a 7 to 9 year sentence, but Barr backed off that following complaints from President Trump. Judge Amy Berman Jackson said Stone merited a significant sentence, but said the 7 to 9 year recommendation was excessive. The 67-year-old Stone's lawyers asked for no prison time, citing his age, health, and lack of a criminal record. He's the sixth Trump associate or advisor convicted on charges stemming from the special counsel's Russia probe. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
Meanwhile, President Trump expressed hope that Roger Stone will get a new trial and be exonerated. VOA's Steve Herman reports.
The president, speaking in Las Vegas to former prison inmates reentering society, said he'll let the process play out for now, but at some point will decide whether to intervene using his presidential clemency powers.
I'm not going to do anything in terms of the great powers bestowed upon a president of the United States. I want the process to play out.
Trump added that he hopes a judge will agree with him that Stone deserves a new trial because one of the jurors allegedly posted anti-Trump material on social media. Steve Herman, VOA News at the White House.
This is VOA News. China's National Health Commission said Friday the number of coronavirus infections increased again Thursday after declining in previous days. The commission said it had nearly 900 confirmed new cases of the virus, up from just under 400 on Wednesday. The death toll in China has reached more than 2,200 people. Meanwhile, South Korea reported another 52 cases of coronavirus infection. However, the World Health Organization said Thursday the overall trend of infections worldwide continues to decline. The United Nations says it is very alarmed about the safety and protection of more than 3 million civilians in Idlib and its surrounding areas in Syria. We get more from VOA's Heather Murdoch in Manbij.
We are here in a camp about 2 days' journey from Idlib, where families have fled. For many, it is the closest, relatively safe place to take shelter. But families here are still short on medicine, electricity, and other basic needs. Since December, 900,000 people have been displaced, and hundreds have died, including children that have frozen to death. Families here in this camp say they have been displaced 3, 4, or 5 times. Many of their friends and relatives, they say, are still trapped in the battle zone. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad hopes to declare victory over a multitude of warring parties in Idlib, but aid organizations say without an immediate ceasefire, the crisis will deepen. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Manbij, Syria.
U.S. government authorities have launched a new enforcement operation focusing on methamphetamine trafficking hubs. AP's Mike Gracia has details.
Federal authorities have launched a new initiative aimed at disrupting the trafficking of methamphetamine in the United States. In Atlanta Thursday, Acting Administrator Utham Dhillon announced the DEA is launching
Operation Crystal Shield.
The operation will focus on 8 so-called transportation hubs where meth is brought into the U.S. from Mexico.
One here in Atlanta and the other 7 throughout the United States. Los Angeles, Phoenix, El Paso, Dallas, Houston, St. Louis, and New Orleans.
The DEA says seizures of meth in the U.S. increased by 127% between fiscal years 2017 and 2019. I'm Mike Gracia.
New Mexico's attorney general has sued Google over allegations the tech company is illegally collecting personal data generated by children in violation of federal and state laws. The lawsuit claims that Google is using its education services package that is marketed to school districts, teachers, and parents as a way to spy on children and their families. For more, visit voanews.com. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan parties agree to form a long-awaited unity government tomorrow, Saturday.
Right now, we have agreed to form the government on February 22nd. What is expected next is for us to discuss, and we trust that we will settle it.
A new report accuses South Sudan's government and opposition forces of deliberately preventing millions of citizens from receiving access to life-saving services. The United States says it will support African governments to stabilize their countries. And Lesotho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane is expected to be charged tomorrow, today, Friday, for the killing of his estranged wife.
I think as he did indicate in his statement that he's prepared to step down even before the end of July, but if the nation is willing to step down immediately, he's ready to do that.
A Ugandan court orders the release of a staunch critic of President Yoweri Museveni. Britain follows European Union to renew targeted sanctions against Zimbabwe, and Liberia's government breaks ground for a major road project. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar say they will form the long-awaited unity government tomorrow, Saturday. The two appeared together yesterday, Thursday, in the South Sudan capital, Juba, to announce that they have agreed to resolve outstanding issues after the new transitional government has been formed. Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Speaking in Arabic, President Kiir told reporters he will dissolve the current transitional government later today and appoint the agreed to five vice presidents before forming the unity government on Saturday.
We sat today and agreed that we will form the government. And in the formation of the government, there are things that we will continue to discuss as a transitional government of national unity, such as security arrangement in Juba and protection of SPLM in opposition. I have taken the responsibility that, as the unified forces are still under training, my soldiers will be responsible for the general security in Juba. We have also agreed that my soldiers will protect all the VIPs from the opposition.
Speaking in Arabic briefly at the same news conference, opposition leader Machar confirmed the SPLM-IO will participate in forming a transitional government of national unity beginning Saturday.
Right now, we have agreed to form the government on February 22nd. What is expected next is for us to discuss, and we trust that we will settle it.
President Kiir appealed to officials in the current government who may not be reappointed into the next transitional government of national unity to not take up arms against the government.
I want to tell the people of South Sudan that all the changes that are taking place right now are to bring peace and not changes that will bring conflict again, because we are tired of conflict.
Sudanese Sovereign Council member Mohamed Hamdan Himeti Daglo praised Kiir for agreeing to revert back to the original 10 states. He says both parties have shown interest in ending the suffering of the South Sudanese people.
Peace needs patience. Peace has a price. But by God's grace, we need to see Juba back to the way it was in the past, and even better than before.
Kiir, Machar and the other parties to the peace deal failed to meet the two previous deadlines to form a unity government on May 12, 2019 and later on November 12, 2019. Both leaders face enormous pressure from Western leaders and regional leaders to agree on the number of states and their boundaries before Saturday deadline. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
United Nations investigators are accusing South Sudan's government and opposition forces of deliberately starving and preventing millions of citizens from receiving access to basic life-saving services. This, according to a new report by the Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The Human Rights Commissioners say corruption and political competition are fueling human rights abuses and are major drivers of ethnic conflict in South Sudan. The UN estimates more than 50,000 people have been killed and around 4 million have been displaced both internally and as refugees since the country erupted in conflict in December 2013. Commission member Andrew Clapham says more than 55% of the population, mainly women and children, do not have enough to eat because the warring parties are preventing aid agencies from reaching them.
Deliberate starvation is quite clearly occurring along ethnic and political lines in an effort to marginalize dissident communities as well as those perceived to be too disenfranchised to challenge the status quo or demand transitional justice mechanisms. Starvation as a war crime and as a crime against humanity has occurred and ought to be prosecuted.
The commission report finds the government is riddled with corruption. It accuses government officials of plundering the national treasury. Clapham says these officials are pocketing millions of dollars, depriving millions of vulnerable civilians with the food and basic services essential for their survival.
Officials in the government of South Sudan are implicated in this pillaging of public funds in South Sudan, as well as money laundering, bribery, and tax evasion. High-ranking officials have used their official positions to influence decisions on the allocation of state resources and official procurement, diverting public funds for personal gain and advantage.
The 56-page report goes into great and horrific detail about widespread violations being committed by all parties to the conflict. It describes the recruitment of child soldiers as young as 12, the pervasive sexual and gender-based violence, including conflict-related sexual violence and brutal cattle raids between ethnic communities. South Sudan's foreign minister is scheduled to address the UN Human Rights Council next Wednesday and may have plenty to say then. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Lesotho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane is expected to appear in court today, Friday, to be charged with the killing of his estranged wife, Lepolele Thabane. First Lady Misaya Thabane has already been charged with the murder of the Prime Minister's estranged wife. She is currently out of jail after being granted bail. Feko Moshoeshoe, chairperson of the ruling All Basotho Convention ABC Parliamentary Caucus, says the group is expediting plans to find the Prime Minister's replacement, depending on what happens in court today.
There's been a great day in our country today after the Prime Minister has officially announced and give us the date when he's retiring. Then I think the next step down, then we have to call the caucus and sit down and talk about the one name that we go to our coalition partners and tell them that we have elected a certain name that we give it to them so that that name can be taken to the parliament so that that person will become the next prime minister after prime minister has retired. As he has indicated that by the end of July, he's retiring as he has told the nation that he has been serving the government for such a long time. Therefore, he needs to retire and relax so that really he appeals to each and everyone in our country, most especially political leaders, to make sure that they see that the peace and prosperity of the country as well for the sake of the country.
Talking about the rule of law, some civil society groups and opposition groups are saying that there's need for the Prime Minister to resign immediately after reports from the police commissioner and officials in the police saying that they will soon charge the Prime Minister for the death of his estranged wife.
I think, as he did indicate in his statement, saying that he's prepared even to step down even before the end of July, as he was thinking that he wanted to step down on the end of July, but if the nation is willing him to step down immediately, he's ready to do that. That's why I'm saying that we have to call the caucus as soon as possible, as soon as Monday, so that we can sit down and come up with one name, definitely. Definitely, I think even the National Executive of ABC will have to respond immediately on those issues and come to the caucus and just let us know who they think will be the right prime minister, will be the right person to become a prime minister. Then we'll take it from there and use what we call a party land, and from there we'll sit down with the MPs and discuss the name which has been given by National Executive Committee. so that it can continue as one.
Who do you think will be uniquely qualified to become the next Prime Minister of Lesotho from the ABC? Because I'm hearing that some people are saying it is time for a woman to become the next Prime Minister.
Really, I'm not the right person to say that. As a chairperson, I'm just listening to the honourable MPs, whatever they want, the person to become an Prime Minister. That's the one who has got the right to do that.
Feko Moshoeshoe is the chairperson for Lesotho's ruling Obasotho Convention Parliamentary Caucus. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital Maseru. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bott in Washington. Today is Friday, February 21st. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. U.S. military commanders say the United States will support African governments in their efforts to secure and stabilize their countries. The Africa Land Forces Summit in Ethiopia ended with calls for African troops to improve their human rights record. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
This week, top U.S. military commanders met their counterparts in Africa to discuss ways of protecting African countries from violence and instability. In recent years, the threat of terrorist groups like Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab has increased, and criminal networks have become more brazen and prominent. U.S. Army Africa Commanding General Roger Kutia said the continent needs professional armies to combat the armed groups.
In keeping with this week's theme, which is tomorrow's security, demands leadership today. We've been focused on the roles African land forces chiefs and their senior enlisted leaders have in developing defense institutions that train capable and professional forces that respect the rule of law and human rights and that contribute to greater security and stability on the African continent.
The annual summit of African land forces was attended by representatives from 42 countries who gathered in Addis Ababa to share their experiences in dealing with violence and the need to cooperate in dealing with emerging threats. The U.S. military's Africa Command currently gives support to about a dozen African countries. In particular, the command has carried out many drone strikes against Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab, which has tried for years to overthrow the internationally recognized government of Somalia. In Washington, the Trump administration has signaled it may scale back U.S. military operations in Africa, a decision that many African security experts see a step back in the fight against terror groups. Kutia assured African military leaders his country was not abandoning them.
The review is focused on making sure that the resources we have in Africa are aligned with our national defense strategy. We also want to make sure that we're efficient with our resources, that we're not duplicating effort, and that whatever we're doing on the African continent is complementary. So the bottom line is the United States is not walking away from Africa. We're committed and we remain engaged.
Some African security forces have been accused of using heavy-handed tactics to combat insecurity, something that has pushed the youth to join violent groups. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
East African leaders plan to meet today, Friday, at the Ugandan-Rwandan border to resolve the ongoing diplomatic spat between the two neighboring countries. This, according to Ambassador Patrick Mugoya, Permanent Secretary at the Ugandan Foreign Ministry. Ambassador Mugoya says Angolan President João Lourenço and President Félix Tshisekedi of the Democratic Republic of Congo played key roles in organizing Friday's meeting.
The meeting to take place on Friday will be taking place at the border between Rwanda and Uganda, and it's a combination of the efforts that have been undertaken by the President of Angola and that of the DRC to try and help Uganda and Rwanda resolve the differences which resulted in the closure of the border by Rwanda early last year.
So what do you think the expectations are for the peoples of Uganda and Rwanda in anticipation of resolving any possible issues between the two neighboring countries?
The people of Uganda and Rwanda expect there to be a return to normalcy along the common border where both populations can move freely, can trade each other.
Talk to me about the commitment of the administration in Kampala in terms of normalizing relations between the two neighboring countries, particularly when we heard reports that charges that have been dropped and exchange of prisoners from both sides.
Well, that talks to the commitment of both countries, but on the part of Uganda, that is a gesture of goodwill which shows that we are really committed and interested in having this matter resolved once and for all.
Do you think both leaders of Uganda and Rwanda see the need to resolve any possible issues so there is no future occurrences of any possible skirmishes?
This is the fourth summit which will be taken, and the leaders have met three times previously in Rwanda, in Angola, and the fact that this fourth meeting is now taking place at the common border definitely is a sign that a lot of work has been put in and we see progress has been made. And both sides, I think, are committed to ensure that whatever has caused this problem in the past is put to rest and that we can get back to living a normal life along our common border.
Ambassador Patrick Mugoya is Permanent Secretary at the Ugandan Foreign Ministry. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from the capital, Kampala. A Ugandan High Court judge has quashed the conviction of Makerere University researcher Stella Nyanzi, who was jailed for cyber harassment and offensive communication against President Yoweri Museveni. However, Nyanzi's release from prison on Thursday was marked by commotion and firing of live ammunition by prison officials. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Justice Peter Adonyo on Thursday quashed a conviction against Makerere University researcher Stella Nyanzi. Nyanzi has been in jail since November 2018 when the government accused her of cyber harassment and offensive communication against President Yoweri Museveni and his late mother. In a poem posted on Facebook in September 2018, Stella described Museveni's birth as a painful, ugly day, nauseatingly disgusting, horrifically cancerous and traumatically wasted day, among others. Nyanzi was consequently tried in a magistrate's court and sentenced to 18 months in prison. She appealed the sentence, and on Thursday, the judge upheld the appeal.
The judgment defines the lower court as set aside for the illegal, as the court did not have jurisdiction. B, conviction against the appellant is here quashed. C, the appellant is ordered to be released immediately.
Judge Adonyo ruled that Nyanzi's trial wasn't fair on the grounds that the magistrate was biased against the defendant and did not ensure the attendance and testifying of witnesses, among other flaws. He said the prosecution failed to prove that Nyanzi's actions added up to cyber harassment and did not prove that she was using a computer or was in Uganda at the time of the alleged offense. Outside of court Thursday, Nyanzi was glad to be out of prison but wondered why she was in jail for this long.
Why was I in prison for more than 1 year? I want to understand why the lower courts in Uganda are abusing the rights and freedoms that are constitutionally provided for all Ugandans, the right to a fair hearing. Why was I in prison? Because I wrote a poem? Because I expressed my deep disinterest and disgust of the NRM regime? Is that why I was in prison?
A few minutes after she spoke, there was commotion and Nyanzi fainted before she was rushed out of the court premises by her supporters.
We know that they want to help for her. They just want their car back by the way.
Prison officials fired into the air to disperse the growing crowd before putting Nyanzi into a van and taking her back to jail. Her lawyer accompanied Nyanzi in the van, and she is still expected to be freed within the next 24 hours after being processed for release. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
The Liberian government broke grounds yesterday, Thursday, for a major roadway projected to safely connect the country's international airport to the capital, Monrovia. Moses Gaziewu reports from Monrovia.
This project, when completed, is expected to make travel between the capital and the international airport easier. The road is prone to accidents and most often inaccessible during the rainy season due to flooding. Mabutu Yipan, Liberia's public works minister, says the widening of the road will address those challenges.
You know, during the rainy season, the road is always flooded because of the low level of the road. You also know that the lighting facilities are virtually non-existent. Also, we need to expand the road. And so this project will certainly address that. The road will be expanded into a dual carriageway with a medium in the center.
While declaring the project officially open, President George Weah described the Rabus-Field-Monrovia Highway a death trap for travelers.
This is a project that is long overdue because of the safety hazards presented by its narrowness and darkness. The RRA highway has been a death trap since it was built in the 1940s.
The new road improvement project comes months after the government opened a new passenger terminal at the Rabus International Airport. President Weah said the four-lane road and the terminal will give visitors first and good impression about Liberia.
This road corridor, together with the new terminal at the airport, present the first impression of our country to those traveling to Liberia through the airport.
Public Works Ministry officials said the project will cost about $95 million United States dollars, with parts of that amount coming from the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS Development Bank. ECOWAS Ambassador to Liberia, Babatunde Ajisomo, said the project fulfills ECOWAS infrastructure agenda.
Today's occasion, therefore, fits in into ECOWAS Regional Infrastructure Master Plan, which is aimed at promoting interconnectivity of our infrastructure from roads to air, and air to sea, and of course also to rail.
According to engineers, the road project is expected to last for about 3 years and will comprise different features, which will include a toll gate to contribute to revenue generation. Moses Gazeu, VOA News, Monrovia.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the latest FIFA rankings for the month of February released on Thursday. Senegal remain at the summit of African football with 155 points, which places them in 20th position in the world, while the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia are second and ranked 27th in the world. Nigeria remained unmoved at number 31 in the world and are now Africa's third best nation, while Algeria and Morocco complete the top five in that order. The Tunisian Football Federation on Thursday submitted their bid to host the final of the 2019-2020 CAF Champions League. The bid was submitted on deadline day for applications, as Tunisia will be facing competition from Morocco and Rwanda. Morocco had applied on Wednesday to host both the CAF Champions League and the Confederations Cup Finals. It is noteworthy that the format of the CAF Champions League final has changed this season, where the winner is decided through only one game. The final is set to take place on the 29th of May, as the venue for the game is yet to be determined by CAF. The poor state of the playing surfaces in most African countries has in turn had a negative impact on the quality of football played on the continent. It's against the background that the Federation of Uganda Football Association, in partnership with UEFA, has sought the services of Philip Fairfield to grow capacity in the realm of pitch management and maintenance. Fairfield is currently in the process of visiting 17 stadia dotting the country before his working visit ends on Sunday.
So the purpose of the visits are to do an assessment each football pitch that we come to see which level and standard the playing surface is at the moment. The testing that we do on each visit is based to a UEFA standard, so we can then receive some data from the pitch to see where we're at and where we need to go, and also where the pitch has been and how we can help further improve the development of the pitches in Uganda.
Away from football, the 15th edition of the Uganda International Badminton Tournament got underway on Thursday with the qualification round in both the men and women categories. 13 Ugandans have muscled their way into the main draw of this year's Uganda International Badminton Championship. The four-day tournament will feature 64 foreign participants and 98 Ugandans, all battling for points ahead of the Tokyo Olympic Games. Fidelia Shelika and John Mbulu from Kenya recount their performance from day one.
So far, the competition is not bad because I just defeated Praise of Uganda, and the next round I'm going to play Anupama of India.
We are expecting good results out of this, because actually our players have been training very well.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, February 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.